Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. If you've ever wanted to test drive an electric vehicle, you have your chance in Snowmass Village this week.
The Food and Wine Classic shows us how they take out the trash sustainably.
Garfield County got confirmation that its air is clean and getting even cleaner.
And we sit down to talk with the executive editor of publishing company Viking Penguin.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
Congressman Scott Tipton will hold a telephone town hall next week. Allison Bechtesh reports.
In a statement this week, the congressman wrote that he can't make it to all of the 29 counties that he represents. Instead, on Monday, anyone may dial in for a group phone call. Tipton will speak about some of his recent work in D.C. and then take questions. Communications Director Liz Payne says he then brings constituent concerns back to his staff.
We talk to him afterwards and hear what questions he received and if there needs to be any follow-up or action items, but it's really just an opportunity for the congressman to continue his dialogue with his constituents and make sure that he knows, you know, what's on the top of their minds so he can bring their feedback here.
In a call this spring, 100,000 people registered for the telephone town hall. Payne says about 10,000 were on the line at peak participation. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
The state office that focuses on energy efficiency will no longer be funded starting in July. A special last-minute request from Governor John Hickenlooper's office to save state funding for the Colorado Energy Office failed along party lines earlier this week. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
The state legislature's joint budget committee is split evenly between Republicans and Democrats. The two parties disagree on how the office should operate and then rejected Hickenlooper's $3 million request to begin July 1st. Republicans were united against the idea, including Representative Bob Rankin of Carbondale.
I would not be prepared to just continue it in its current form. I hope there's some way that we can come to an agreement over what the mission of the office would be and that we can get bipartisan acceptance of that. We're not there.
Much of the disagreement over the office centers on a debate over oil and gas and renewable energy. It was not immediately clear how many of the 24 state employees at the office could be laid off. The energy office says programs to help Colorado become more energy efficient will now be cut or scaled back. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Last week, Carbondale entered into an agreement with Airbnb. That's the popular short-term home rental service. It connects potential renters and vacationers with property owners. Airbnb will start collecting taxes for Carbondale. Wyatt discussed the new arrangement with producer Kristen Kay. He started with the details of the agreement.
The town charges a 3.5% sales tax and a 2% lodging tax. When someone's online making their booking, Airbnb will charge those taxes right then and there.
So why this new arrangement? What problem is this meant to address?
It's a problem that a lot of places have with Airbnb. Carbondale's no different. How can towns and cities make sure that people are paying taxes on this new source of income that they're earning? Up until now, how it's worked is the property owner, whoever's renting out their space on Airbnb, they collect that tax and then they hand it over to the town. And this process involves a few steps. One of them is getting a sales tax license from the town. Airbnb is going to cut that part out of the process.
How successful has the town been in getting Airbnb hosts to pay their taxes before this?
We don't really know. Basically, what the town staff has to do is they go online to sites like Airbnb or VRBO, which stands for Vacation Rental by Owner, and they see which properties are being advertised within the town. They try to figure out where those properties are. They figure out who owns those properties, and then they send a letter to make sure that they have that sales tax license.
Wow, that's a lot of hunting.
It's a lot of hunting. And in fact, as I was reporting on this, I couldn't help but notice a comparison to the game Whack-A-Mole. It's like they have to find the owners, they have to make sure the owners have those sales tax licenses and that they're actually collecting the tax and paying it to the town. And new properties are popping up all the time. So the town staff has to manage all these different websites and has to track down the owners to make sure they're in compliance. What Airbnb is proposing to do is basically to make the process easier for both the town and the property owner.
Any idea how big of a difference this is going to make?
If Carbondale sees an increase in revenue from their lodging tax, They're going to assume that it's working. But there's no way for them to say definitively, yes, the fact that Airbnb is now collecting taxes is what is contributing to this increase in lodging tax.
Pitkin County Sheriff Joe DeSalvo has expanded his annual fundraiser benefiting a mental health crisis center. It's part of an effort to broaden its reach in a community that sees the highest rate of suicide in the state. Carolyn Zachariasen sat down with DeSalvo to discuss why this fundraiser is so near to his heart.
The benefit for the Hope Center, and the Hope Center is a crisis organization that deals with people who are in very, very dark places and thinking of ending their lives. And this is a place where if you are feeling that way, you can reach out, get the help you need immediately, and then get the follow-up care you need as well. It's very underfunded. The Hope Center is a nonprofit organization that relies pretty much on some grants from the city and county, but mostly from donations. And I've seen them greatly affect the lives of at least a few of my friends who are in dark places. And
they've been helped?
Yes. And that's another thing that the Hope Center deals with, is families that are dealing with this kind of crisis. Okay. One of our first clients was a friend of mine who, you know, as a 32-year police officer, I was dealing with dark ages. You would have somebody who was threatening suicide, and it would be like a police officer sitting with them and trying to talk them through or out of this until we could get a mental health counselor. Well, it was like that up until, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when then the Hope Center came along. And for the first time ever, I had a friend who was in a dark place and it was not good. And I called the Hope Center, and within, I'd say less than 30 minutes, I had a clinician on site that was doing the right thing instead of me winging it. Mm-hmm. And he's alive today, and he's got a child and a wife, and life's different.
How much are you hoping to raise, or what's the goal, and what did you raise last year?
Is this the second annual golf event, and we expanded it this year. Last year, we raised around $60,000. Yeah, I'd like to raise $100,000 this year. So this is my pet charity. I bet no one who's listening, I bet there's 2 degrees of separation between anyone listening and a suicide, especially in this valley. It's that close.
Do you know how much of that, what $100,000 does for an organization like that?
That does a considerable amount. They are on a shoestring, and they're doing millions of dollars worth of business for a small amount of money. Right. I mean, you know, their help. How much does a life cost to save?
To hear more of the conversation, log on to aspenpublicradio.org.
Aspen summer season officially kicked off last weekend with the Food and Wine Classic. It's an iconic event, and as Elizabeth reports, one that also sets the bar for how to manage the far less glamorous side, taking out the trash.
Patron popsicles right here.
It is a blend between Tempranillo grapes and Cabernet.
It's spicy pulled pork.
Very organic vodka.
Before Tempranillos, chew a classical Rioja.
So this is Verlasso salmon sashimi.
The Food and Wine Classic is all about tasting, sampling delicacies from across the country and the world. And that means a lot of half-eaten or untouched food and drinks headed to the garbage.
Compost.
Well, mostly to the compost. Liz Chapman is the City of Aspen's waste reduction specialist. She says historically, the Food and Wine Classic diverts 80 to 90% of its waste through composting or recycling.
They are our most waste-conscious event by a landslide.
There are several reasons for that. One is that the City of Aspen has some pretty high expectations and tough requirements for events that use city-owned property. The Z Green Guide and Checklist is 4 pages long. It boils down to a few key ideas. If you're serving food and beverages, you have to have a compost bin next to every trash and recycling container. And no trashy one-use giveaways like foam fingers. And for consumption events, that also means food and wine has to be in containers that can be composted, recycled, or reused.
That is the highest order. We'd much rather see things get reused, washed, and used again.
Like all the wine glasses at the Classic, but if it has to be disposable.
Compost is the best one. That stays local. It's a full closed circle right here in the valley.
That's Jeremy Fries. He's been in charge of all the waste coming out of Food and Wine for nearly a decade. The compost that makes up about half of the 20 tons of garbage is all the food waste, plus about 100,000 plates, flatware, and more. Those plates, they're made of palm leaves found already fallen to the earth in India. It's all destined for an industrial compost facility at the Pitkin County landfill, where it will sit in giant piles, slowly turning to fodder for next spring's plantings. Free says in addition to the environmental benefits, green events are actually less expensive.
It's doing the right thing with the material, number one, and then it's also saving the event money, ultimately, from not disposing of it all as trash.
That's because the landfill fees for trash are 4 times more than those for compost. On the front end, though, separating materials can be both time-consuming and expensive. Food and Wine manages this with a huge force of volunteers who are rewarded with passes. There are 150 people manning the trash stations on the so-called green team every day. But other local events can't offer the same kind of incentives for volunteers that Food and Wine does. Freeze also manages waste for the X Games. There, separating the trash from the compost and recycling looks a little different.
And then we've got a team that actually tear every single trash bag open, go through it, separate it out into the right material and where it goes.
Sorting the 50 tons of waste produced at the X Games takes tons of time. And X Games isn't subject to Aspen's checklist. It's outside city limits, not on city property, and Pitkin County does not have a similar waste program for special events. But Free says the organizers are still dedicated to limiting trash.
So much of it now is it's more of a social thing, and I think where it's become socially expected of a lot of these events.
Just like at Jazz Aspen Snowmass, which Free says is taking steps this year to reduce trash. The key, he says, is pretty simple.
It takes commitment.
That focus on sustainability can strike a strange contrast with the reality of Aspen's flashiest consumption event. But Liz Chapman with the city says that environmentalism and consumerism don't have to be diametrically opposed.
I think what Aspen is saying is come here and have a good time and be environmentally minded while you do it. Make choices along the way that reduce your impact.
Choices that go well beyond just red, white, or rosé. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. Stay in the know with what's happening in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond through our social media channels. Follow Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, and like us on Facebook for news updates, compelling images, and intriguing stories. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
Nominees for the 2017 Henry Awards, the highest theater honor in Colorado, were announced on Tuesday. Claire Woodcock has the local results.
Thunder River Theater Company has received its first ever Henry Award nomination, and then its second, and its third. In fact, they received 11 nominations total. Resident designer and technical director Sean Jeffries became the first person ever to receive 5 standalone nominations in 1 year. He's being recognized for his lighting, set, and sound design chops. Thunder River's executive artistic director Corey Simpson was nominated for 3 awards. He's up for his production and direction of last fall's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and for supporting actor in The Tempest. Jeffries says that when the pair, both new to the company, first learned of the news,
Corey Simpson and I just started laughing to the point of falling down in the hallway.
Company actors Nathan Cox and Owen O'Farrell were also nominated. And Thunder River is being recognized for its outstanding season for a theater company. Winners will be announced at the awards ceremony in Parker, Colorado on July 17th. Claire Woodcock, Edless Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Garfield County's Board of Commissioners renewed a contract with the state to monitor air quality. As Wyatt reports, the air is good and has gotten better over the past several years.
The commissioners decided to re-up the $85,000 contract with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment for 2017. They also heard a presentation from Morgan Hill, who's an environmental health specialist with the county's public health department. She presented the 2016 air quality data report to the commissioners. There are 5 air quality monitoring sites throughout the county, and the data they collect suggests pollution is decreasing. One reason for this, there's less oil and gas drilling in the county.
That may be one thing. We know that industry, the oil and gas industry, is improving their technologies. We also have speculated that vehicles are getting cleaner.
The Elected Officials Transportation Committee is comprised of the Aspen City Council, Snowmass Village Town Council, and Pitkin County Commissioners. The group meets quarterly, which offers a few glimpses a year into the conflicting interests of the different jurisdictions. Allison Bechtesh spoke with producer Kristen Kay about what happened at last week's meeting of the EOTC.
The big thing was that the transit study was displayed for the final time. The lead on this was Ralph Trapani, who I think everybody would agree has contemplated the entrance of Aspen Rubik's Cube more than anyone else. What he recommended was that for public transportation interest, the best thing is that there's this solution that goes from the roundabout more across the Marolt open space onto Main Street.
And Marolt is kind of the fields on the right when you're driving into Aspen.
Right. Currently designated open space, and we have some historical buildings that we've placed out there as well. Aspen City Council kind of put a clamp on that, which was very much at odds with the other two communities, which are trying to figure out what the best way into Aspen is. This is Snowmass Village Mayor Marky Butler talking about that Marolt option, as it's known.
At the end of the day, if we don't build the ability to go across Marolt, we haven't solved a congestion problem.
I think that really raises questions about what it means that so much of Aspen's workforce has to commute into town each day. Did Aspen City Council acknowledge this?
The biggest issue with the Aspen City Council is that they don't think that the road through Marolt is ever going to be passed by voters, whether it's the best option or not. It's interesting because you did see more of that dynamic. Rachel Richards, who is on the Pickens County Commissioners now, used to be mayor of Aspen and actually was mayor when there was a vote. And she pointed out this wasn't this divisive issue that people make it out to be. This was like a 48-52 outcome.
So now that Aspen has blocked the Marolt option, what else is on the table?
Collectively, the EOTC did say to Parsons Engineering, go ahead and keep looking at other solutions that don't involve construction, essentially. Even just looking at the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority's schedule and frequency. Another way to do that is to get these electric buses that are 40 feet long, so they hold way more passengers. What's funny about electric vehicles, again, this is a community by community thing, is that especially in the colder, higher elevations of Snowmass Village, they don't always run or charge. At the bottom of all of this is funding. There are some statewide grants where you put in your proposal as a community years before that grant ever comes in. And so what George Newman from Pickens County kept reiterating is, let's make a plan. Let's just get a plan in so we can make a request for one of these grants and have something to help improve transportation.
Okay, thanks, Allison.
You're welcome.
When an 8-year-old died at Hanging Lake last week, after reportedly slipping and hitting his head, sympathies immediately went out to his parents. That day was probably the worst of their lives, but it was a scarring day for others, too. Wyatt spoke with Garfield County Sheriff Lou Valario about the trauma debrief his department provides in the wake of the little boy's death.
How do you go about processing something like that?
Well, we have a trauma team at the Garfield County Sheriff's Office. And it was set up because we knew that we would eventually have some type of traumatic event within our organization. So we set up ahead of time a team which consists of employees from the different areas of the organization, and they volunteer on this team. They go through training, and they essentially deal with traumatic events.
Can you just talk a little bit about that program?
Generally, the program is a trauma debriefing. We try anytime we have something that's traumatic, and that's kind of a vague term, but something that's out of the ordinary, and certainly dealing with the death of an 8-year-old and the circumstances, that's extraordinary. So we offer a debriefing. Essentially, people that are there that are struggling or might struggle with, you know, the nature of what they saw. And so it's just sort of a very relaxed talking about what happened, going through the steps, asking people how they feel about it, giving them some tools and some resources if they're, you know, all of a sudden not sleeping at night or having nightmares.
Is this something that the longer you're in this job, the more you see of this kind of thing and the less you're affected by it? Is this sort of offered for younger, more inexperienced members of your teams?
Probably just the opposite. Traditionally in our business, in emergency response, law enforcement, we see these things frequently, but historically haven't really taken the steps to debrief and seek counseling and that. So what happens is to sort of build it up and kind of put it on a shelf, so to speak. And then the longer you get in, you're in the business, the more things on your shelf where eventually that shelf breaks. What we're trying to do is avoid that.
What does it look like when that shelf breaks? I mean, have you experienced that personally with colleagues?
You know, I haven't seen it directly, but you know, drinking too much or gambling too much or marital issues or suicide or, you know, work performance. I mean, it can manifest itself in numerous ways. So we want to address those issues ahead of time. We want people to understand what causes that.
How has this evolved? Is this something that when you started would be totally unheard of?
Not totally, but probably more than not in law enforcement. There was always that feeling in law enforcement that we weren't allowed to have feelings, we weren't allowed to have emotions, we weren't allowed to be affected by these things. And more what we're finding is the best way to keep you healthy and keep you in this job is to work with you and help you deal with that stuff appropriately. So it's really come a long way, particularly in law enforcement over the last few years, of recognizing that and taking steps to minimize the impact rather than wait until that shelf breaks.
Have you ever had counseling, Sheriff?
No, actually, I haven't. I've attended some briefings, of that nature, but I really haven't. And I can tell you, having come into this business 30 years ago, that clearly, and part of the trauma team training that we do is I'm involved in that training, and I open up to my guys and to anybody that's in our training about some of the horrific events that I've seen in my career.
Would you mind sharing like one of those as an example?
Sure. I was at the Glenwood Springs Police Department when we had the Storm King fire. 14 firefighters were burned when the fire blew up on them and they couldn't escape. And a crew of folks went up and recovered them off of the mountain. They flew them down to the airport. And my responsibility was moving from the airport to the coroner's office. So I was able to, unfortunately, view 14 people that had been just grotesquely burned. It still bothers me to have to, think back to it or share it. Had somebody said, hey, why don't you, talk to somebody? I probably would have. We're more cognizant of it now at the sheriff's office than we ever have been. And I'm proud of that because, again, we want our people to be healthy.
Sheriff Velario, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Lou Velario is the sheriff of Garfield County. You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Wyatt Orem. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. While you're browsing our site, make sure to sign up for ForkFed, our weekly digital newsletter. ForkFed arrives in your inbox every Friday, catching you up on the week's news in a fun and informative way.
Today, the 12th annual Aspen Ideas Festival kicks off. Although passes have been sold out for months, there are still plenty of opportunities to attend the dozens of public events taking place over the next week. A few years ago, the Aspen Institute opened its festival to the public. This year, there will be over 80 seminars, films, and performances happening. Events range from discussions about health, like how safe is your hospital, to seminars with Alonzo King's ballet titled Nourishing Heart and Body Through Art, as well as movie premieres. The public events run through June 30th. Tickets are available through Aspen Show Tickets at the Wheeler Opera House or online at aspenshowtix.com.
American Renewable Energy Day, or R-Day, has grown from a one-day expo to a nearly week-long summit. And this year's event kicked off Monday in Snowmass. Elizabeth was there. She spoke with news director Carolyn Zachariasen, who asked about the focus of this year's summit.
Well, the title this year is Making America Greater, the Business of Innovation, Climate Leadership, and Resilient Communities. And then within that, there's really a focus on leadership around climate ideas, business and economics, and also local actions that communities and individuals can take.
That's a lot of ground to cover. So you were there yesterday. What'd you learn?
Well, yesterday morning was all about the current political environment and how to better communicate facts about climate change to kind of change the narrative that we're hearing in America right now. So admittedly, events like this address the choir. There's a lot of discussion about how to reach beyond those who are already engaged and who already care. So one PR expert talked about polling data that shows that Americans are just not concerned about climate change. It ranks really low on the list of priorities every year. It's not viewed as urgent, and it's difficult to communicate.
That's pretty surprising.
Well, it's hard, I think, for people to wrap their heads around, like, in the future, this catastrophic thing is going to happen. So climate change does not get that much media attention. One presentation yesterday cited data that says across four networks, there was a total of 50 minutes devoted to climate in all of 2016. And that's TV, national news. I think we hear maybe a little bit more on the radio about it. But
like right now.
Right. But several speakers and panels talk about how to change that, how to get the media to report on how severe the crisis is. Communication companies are buying ads with really clear, simple messages and powerful images about the real impacts of climate change that also focus on solutions. So there's a move towards reporting news that's concrete, really focused on physical evidence that we have, that's also local. So this isn't local to us, but a journalist from Ireland talked about how there are now moray eels off the coast of Ireland, and that water used to be way too cold for those eels to exist there. Those eels are typically seen as pretty vicious and frightening to you know, most beachgoers. And he talked about how now that water is warm enough to support eels, and he doesn't want his kids in that water when they go back to vacation.
So scare them.
That, I guess his point is that coverage needs to be personal, local, and urgent. It's all about finding the people who, like, kind of care but don't know how to act, and then giving them actions they can take. Someone to vote for, a green product to buy, things like that.
Carol DeSanti is vice president and executive editor with Viking Penguin Publishing Company. She's in town for Aspen Word's summer series. Arts and culture reporter Claire Woodcock spoke with her about what she looks for when selecting a manuscript to publish.
I'm so curious how you see your role as a publisher and as an editor in championing the voices of contemporary authors.
All along and from the first, I feel like my work is first and foremost to listen. It's a kind of listening that I really started to learn as a young person when I was using library books to kind of fill in the gaps from what I wasn't hearing from the adults around me. And I really looked for and listened for voices that helped me to grow up and understand who I was and show me a way into a world that seemed very confusing and full of conflict. But as a professional editor, I listened for something elemental about a voice, some quality that contributes to my understanding, something that shows me, that tells me something new, that opens up a window in my mind. The essence of it needs to be that I feel like there's something really here that I connect with and I'm excited about. And then once I find a way to talk about it and translate it to the group that I work with here in-house, I will present to them and bounce ideas and themes and stories off them to gauge interest and get a sense of the questions, their doubts, their excitement.
You're going to be moderating a couple of discussions. And one of those big questions that's going to be posed during the Aspen Word Summer Writing Series is, how can literature forge connections and shape public conversation around critical issues without polarizing readership? That is such a loaded question. I am wondering if you have a quick answer for that.
Literature, it has to do what it's always done throughout history, and our history has been a long and difficult one as human beings on the planet. It has to remind us of the way to our hearts. It has to teach our souls how to be better, one by one, person by person. And that's kind of the simplest, shortest view of it. That's ultimately literature's job, its only job. The great books of history unite us. They don't divide us. They're our teachers, and we know when we're better for having read them.
That was Viking Penguin's vice president and executive editor, Carol DeSanti, speaking with Aspen Public Radio before this year's Aspen Words Summer Words program, which runs this week. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. To hear this show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. News director Carolyn Zachariasen talks with a panel of local journalists about the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.
Also, if you're interested in following me on Twitter, you can join the three other people.
One of whom is my mom.
One of whom is me.